For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, and welcome back into another episode of the Celtics Lab Podcast. I'm your host today, Cameron Tubbs-Tabai, joined as always by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. Later, we'll welcome in Jared Weiss of The Athletic to break down some of the increasingly loud buzz surrounding the Celtics and Thursday's trade deadline. Jared's going to shine some light on the recent reporting he and others have done about this deadline and why Aaron Gordon, Harrison Barnes, or John Collins could end up in Boston. But first, Alex and Dr. Quinn, how are we?
Well, I'm in an interesting place here, Cam, because on the one hand, I'm feeling quite good about today. It's very nice out. I had a pretty good day teaching kids and breaking their brains with all sorts of fancy philosophy stuff. And, you know, I'm overall feeling very good about my life. But I'm also doing so with the knowledge lingering in the back of my mind that Marcus Smart is in trade talks right now. And if that's the case, our next Celtics Lab episode is going to have a decidedly different vibe.
I'm kind of feeling that as well. I've been trying to like inoculate myself. You know, all the chatter that I'm hearing about Marcus Smart moving on, I've heard some very good arguments from a variety of people who I consider smarter than I on this topic. That being said, it's going to sting a lot if it does happen. It's going to sting almost as much as the sound of the power drills you may or may not be able to hear from the renovation going on in the house next to the one I live in Mexico City.
Oh, it's going to sting, but it's not going to sting for me. It is going to sting for Danny Ainge. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go over very well if he does move him.
Well, that's quite the tease. Just, this is so inside baseball, but things move quickly here before a trade deadline. So let's kind of set the table. Justin and I actually spoke to Jared earlier in a pre-recorded session, but you didn't hear that. And we're recording Tuesday afternoon. You'll probably hear this Tuesday night or Wednesday. And so anything that we're about to lay out and offer is subject to change. There are a few things that we'll get to from this past week as well as more pressing matters, perhaps like the state of Tristan Thompson, who it sounds like could be traded by the time we're done recording this. But first, we would be remiss if we didn't just for a second make mention that Elgin Baylor passed away. He lived well into his 80s, which is really nice to hear and see in this day and age, but it's a really heavy loss for the NBA community. Either Alex or Justin, anything that your thoughts on the passing of Elgin Baylor?
The thing I'll say about Elgin Baylor is that without Elgin Baylor, from an aesthetic standpoint, we really would not have the basketball that we have today. Many think of Dr. J as kind of the original progenitor of the art of dunking, but by all accounts, Elgin Baylor was very much his equal. He was unbelievably athletic, well ahead of a time when players could match that athleticism on a regular basis. And by all accounts, he really changed the ceiling for what NBA players are capable of as far as the physical and athletic abilities that they brought to the court. So if you like NBA basketball today, if you like explosive dunks, Robert Williams skying to block shots, and the general super high pace and frenetic drama of the NBA, you probably have Elgin Baylor to thank for it.
Really good description. As old as I am, he was way before my time, and getting into history, particularly doing Celtics Wire's daily history posts, I've gained an appreciation for what he has also done off the court in terms of pushing race relations as a major issue within the league and in society more generally. And, you know, we lost a big fighter in that regard as well.
Yeah, Dr. Quinn, that's better said than what I was going to offer, but I'm going to read from Kevin Durant's Instagram. It's a screen grab of a text. Someone texts him, Elgin Baylor only played in 48 games in 1961 because he was in the Army and could only play on weekends, but still averaged 39 and 19. That's my favorite NBA fact. And it looks like Durant responds, God level shit, LOL, RIP. Yeah, just a titan of basketball and humanity. I think both of you summed that up really well. And you can't really talk about the Celtics without talking about the Celtics in the 60s, and you can't really talk about the NBA in the 60s without talking about Elgin Baylor. Another far less significant thing that happened since we last talked was Brad Stevens really put to bed this possibility of him moving to Indiana to coach Indiana college basketball. And he insisted that he's an asshole and he gets his dunks, and that's his new reality. So whether or not he was really appropriative in that, I suppose if you're a Brad Stevens fan, that was really nice to hear. Although I don't know that anyone really took those rumors seriously. Any thoughts on that, or that was just...
Nothing, Berger. That was never going to happen from the moment that it was even considered. I think a lot of I think a lot of IU people wanted it to happen and kind of started doing a like wish fulfillment manifesting kind of thing. I know that this rumor primarily originated with one of the Ringer guys, the Club Trillion dude, who is a big college basketball guy. And I think he is a little bit of a memer, and I think he originally made this as a meme and it kind of got out of control. That's my understanding. I don't think Brad Stevens was ever under serious consideration for that job. Maybe in a couple of years, but not right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Indiana fans did believe it was going to happen. Some of whom I've spoken with were very, very, shall we say, open-minded to it happening, to the point where it is approaching some kind of disturbing levels, but some others have been pretty nice in conversations I've had with them about it. But yeah, completely agreed, never going to happen. Just $22 million would be the third biggest buyout in sports history at that rate. And all the top 10 ones that have happened in college have been football, not basketball.
I think Brad is not leaving the Celtics voluntarily.
Said. Just quickly, we're going to hone in more on the Celtics themselves and what's to come, but LeBron James could be out for perhaps a month, and LaMelo Ball also out, the former with a high ankle sprain, the latter with a fractured wrist, I believe. Any thoughts on these injuries, how they relate to Rookie of the Year, MVP, the state of the league, or, hey, these things happen?
The first thing to say is that it's just adding to what has already been a massive bummer of a season as far as missing time with COVID and injuries are concerned. We've had numerous superstars missing extended amounts of time, and the quality of play has largely been worse as a result. Shocker. The thing that I would say is that as far as the MVP race goes, the only thing about this that makes me happy is that the door is now open for Nikola Jokic. If the Denver Nuggets can climb up to a top three seed and Jokic plays the rest of the season playing at the statistical level that he has been, I think he's now the favorite for MVP, which would be incredibly cool. And I would love to say that Nikola Jokic is the MVP of the league. I'm a big Jokic guy. He's the man. Maybe Embiid can come back in this race, depending on when he comes back and how he looks after he comes back. James Harden and Giannis both have a very strong statistical case for MVP, as does Dame Lillard for that matter. But I think Giannis and Harden are both going to suffer from a narrative standpoint, and the MVP is ultimately a narrative-based award. Lillard is a name to watch. I think that Jokic's chances are better, but if Lillard continues to carry the Blazers night in and night out and they keep climbing up the West standings, that could be something to think about. And then for Rookie of the Year, LaMelo Ball was one of my favorite players to watch this year. He was awesome from the moment he set foot on the court, and I will be bummed that he is not here. I think the door is now open for Tyrese Halliburton and Anthony Edwards to kind of assert themselves in that race. But honestly, I have a hard time seeing them get much better to the point that we can invalidate Melo's incredible production as a rookie. And I would have no problem giving him the Rookie of the Year award if trends currently continue into the rest of the season.
I think he's getting it. I do think there's actually now they're talking about him possibly being reevaluated in time to return this season. So if that happens and you know he's even able to get it back on the court at all, I think that it's going to be very, very difficult, even if he doesn't get back on the court at all, for them to catch up with him. I do think there's also some other concerns with LeBron being out for so long, particularly considering that Anthony Davis is likely not back for another 3 weeks or so. I don't think that the Lakers are going to be in any kind of a danger of falling out of the playoff picture, but they are going to find themselves into any situation where it's going to make the Western Conference end of the season at the end in the playoffs pretty interesting.
Before that, though, maybe we can stay a little focused on the present. We've got Jared coming up, which you're all here for. And you don't care about what we have to say. And we are actually going to play a game with trade deadlines past. But the Celtics find themselves in an interesting position. At the time of this podcast, again, Tuesday afternoon, they're eighth in the East, 21-22, coming off a pretty meh stretch of games that we'll get into here. And importantly, they have a back-to-back, one of those mini COVID series against Milwaukee in Milwaukee this coming Wednesday and this coming Friday, both aired on ESPN. I think Giannis and newly minted buck PJ Tucker could be questionable for Wednesday. I don't think that they would miss Friday, but these are two big games for a Celtics team, perhaps spinning its tires. So maybe we should get into what we've seen as of late from the Celtics before we figure out whether or not this roster is even going to look the same or not this time next week. Boston lost to Sacramento in a pretty bad way. They won against the Magic with 10 threes from Jaylen Brown and zero turnovers. And then a very tough overtime loss against Memphis. Importantly, Jason Tatum posted a picture of him eating hot wings on Snapchat before the game and then was ruled out with an illness. My advice to you is if you are in Memphis and you are planning on enjoying some local cuisine, don't schedule a professional basketball game thereafter. So what did we get from these games? What stood out? What was good? What was bad? What was intriguing?
Of the stuff that I caught, I would say about 80% of these past three games. And of the stuff that I did catch, a couple of things stood out to me. One, Jaylen Brown appears to have broken out of his slump, which he was in prior to the All-Star break, which is good. He is looking a lot better. Threes are going down. He's looking more aggressive attacking the rim, and his defense has improved. Marcus Smart, I think, has looked solid. He's been, you know, his shot selection is always going to be a little iffy, but he has, for the most part, I think, been around doing Marcus Smart things. What's concerning is, and it has been for some time, the Boston Celtics bench depth, which is extremely bad. We are playing a lot of dudes that in Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, Jeff Teague, Semi Ojeleye, the list goes on. A lot of dudes who are being asked to play pretty substantial minutes and are not currently living up to the bill. Another area to, of course, keep an eye on is Kemba Walker, who has not had 20 points in a game since the win against the Los Angeles Clippers. Kemba is, of course, still kind of getting into rhythm, having the fact that he doesn't play back-to-backs is still troubling for sure, but his production so far has been middling, to say the least. So the big takeaways that I have is Jaylen looks better, Smart looks better. Obviously, Rob has just been a revelation. He's looking great. It's seemingly every night. And the Celtics are doing some things a little better, inconsistently, but they are moving the ball a little better. The defensive effort looks a little bit more consistent, but there are still some glaring flaws on this team, particularly when it comes to the bench production.
You know, I can't really add too much to that. The ball movement does indeed look better. I would push back a little on the defense a little bit. It is better, but it's still very bad. And the bench is really the reason why, I think. They just can't defend shit when, pardon my language, when the bench is in. I mean, even sometimes when the starters are in the third quarter, it just looks terrible. And like, how do you establish a rhythm when, you know, one third of the games that are going to be happening in the season, you cannot have one of your best players playing in? There are some serious issues that I think are going to be addressed hopefully this trade deadline, and if not soon, because this team is just not going to work as it's currently constructed.
Yeah, the Celtics continue to be one of the worst teams in the fourth quarter by a really healthy margin. And I don't know how you succeed without figuring that out. The offense to me is really listless for reasons that we've identified. There are moments where perhaps that's been alleviated, but it's not inspired basketball. Because the story will get away from us pretty quickly, we can't say too much about the Tristan Thompson buzz that presumably our listeners have heard. But just in summary, things in the Celtics locker room perhaps aren't that happy, and this might revolve around Tristan Thompson. KOC of The Ringer and others have reported that Tristan Thompson's understanding of COVID protocols, among other things, has kind of perhaps created a rift. And as this trade deadline gears up, Alex, I think that you felt pretty confident Mr. Thompson's days in Boston are numbered.
The fact that he has been out for the amount of time that he has, and, you know, obviously COVID protocol is something to be taken seriously. We've seen players all over the league miss a substantial number of games, but Tristan Thompson has missed a lot of time with COVID protocol. And it's gotten to the point where I am starting to think that Tristan Thompson is being held out of Celtics team activities primarily because he is being moved somewhere. And it makes sense. He is probably the best salary dump guy that we have in terms of his cap figure. He's making $19 million over the course of 2 years. That is an extremely movable contract, especially for most of the players available at the trade deadline. So I suspect that Tristan Thompson will not be on this team for a whole lot longer, especially with the increased reliance on Robert Williams as the Celtics' primary backup center.
I agree. I don't really, I've kind of had the feeling that there's something not right with him for a while now. I joked previously about him trying to kind of get out of being traded, and I might not have been joking in reality. Could be, you know, he could just be flouting. There have been, you know, Instagrams of him on his kid's parent celebrating a birthday party, his birthday, maskless. And it just seems like whether it's intentional flouting within, you know, the goal of making yourself untradeable, or whether he's just in a situation where he just doesn't get it, it ultimately amounts to the same thing. And they I think they need to get off of his salary. He's just kind of a big dead weight on this team in terms of what he's been able to do, even though he has gotten, you know, reasonably better when he is playing. But if you're not playing, what's the point?
So that's a good segue, right? The trade deadline functions as two great opportunities. The first is to bring in new talent, new players, but it's also a way to shuffle the deck in the locker room. So I think we just established that whether or not the Celtics are desperate to bring in high level talent, maybe even just kind of opening the windows, so to speak, and letting the stink out could be helpful. So we'll bring on Jared Weiss of The Athletic shortly enough to kind of break down what he's hearing and seeing. But first, to kind of ground ourselves in reality, we have 2.5 history teachers on the pod. Why don't we go ahead and visit kind of the history of the recent trade deadline with the Celtics. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read you some of the things that have happened in trade deadlines past. And as objective diehard Celtics fans, tell us what you remember feeling, thinking, or retroactively how that looks with a little space between. And the first one, I think, is a really good pace setter. The last time the Celtics were really up to anything at the deadline was 2018 when they signed Greg Monroe. Dr. Quinn, what do you remember thinking at the time, and how does that look in the rear view?
I was very excited.
Ha! Me too.
Yeah.
No lie.
The moose.
Yep. I was
wrong. And how does it look in the rear view? Yeah. Alex, what do you remember?
Oh, I was hyped. I remember for multiple weeks prior to the deadline, because the Celtics were not in a position where they could make a lot of moves as per usual. And I remember thinking, you know, if Greg Monroe gets bought out, this could be a really good fit for this team. Of course, what I hadn't realized was that Greg Monroe was a very different player from the one that I had initially projected him to be. Didn't watch a lot of Pistons basketball that year. So I thought that Greg would be a nice bolster to what was ultimately a kind of cursed team, but didn't work out that way, did it? No show in the playoffs, didn't play like really any minutes at all.
He had like one good game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a cautionary tale for would-be trade hype and then also the buyout market. So good luck with LaMarcus Aldridge to our listeners down in Miami. Okay, so prior to that, something very interesting happened. As best I could tell, 2015, reaching back, was the next time the Celtics were active at the trade deadline. And that was a very successful trade deadline. For those of us who remember, that was the flurry. I think like a quarter of the league got traded in like half an hour. The Celtics did two very fantastic things. They traded Marcus Thornton for Mr. Isaiah Thomas. And they also traded Tayshaun Prince for Jonas Jerebko and Gigi Datome, which was a lot of fun. Pick. And some picks, yeah. I'm going to be with the pick history here. So what do we remember from that moment, and how do we view it looking back?
I was incredibly excited at the time. I really liked Isaiah Thomas in his Kings days. I just really thought that that was a very fun player. And I remember I was in college at the Earlham College Rose City coffee shop procrastinating on a paper that was due the next day, and I opened my phone to take a look at an ESPN notification that Danny Ainge had pulled off the Isaiah Thomas trade. And I was thrilled beyond all belief. I really liked Isaiah coming in. As I said before, the Celtics were frankly dog shit that year and just needed anything fun or cool to happen to them. And Isaiah Thomas was really fun and really cool. So I was excited.
I wasn't excited as I should have been had I been able to see the future, but just the fact that, you know, I thought the Suns had made a big mistake and we were going to get a really good backup role player.
Yeah. I think I'm embarrassingly of the same mindset. Whatever was going on in Phoenix with all those point guards, I couldn't have told you that Isaiah Thomas would emerge as an all-star and a folk hero. And I'd also suggest, I forget specifically how Tayshaun Prince ended up in Boston. He was only there for like 6 weeks and he didn't log that much playing time, but Jonas Jerebko and Gigi Datome, Jerebko made an impact. I mean, he wasn't the most consequential role player, but you know, he got his hands dirty. And
I'm a big Jerebko guy.
I mean, Luigi Datome, that was a fun get. So with respect to Tayshaun Prince, I mean, just for sheer parlor intrigue, what a great trade that was.
And I think the pick became Aaron Nesmith, didn't it?
I would have to look that up later in this activity. I got a little more specific with the picks, but a better version, a better Maybe. Podcast host would have done their homework.
You know, Jordan Crawford is an example of Brad Stevens at his best. He turned a player that was basically out of the league into a player of the week guy. And basically, I mean, for a while, Jordan Crawford was our starting point guard. So sure, why not?
I like Jason Collins, and I particularly like Leandro Barbosa, the Brazilian blur. I was kind of sad to see him go, but, you know, Crawford helped make up for it.
Yeah, and I think, Alex, to your point, Brad Stevens is really good with a good, quick point guard, which makes Kemba's lagging injury so much more frustrating. Let's go back to 2011. At the deadline, the Celtics signed Chris Johnson. They traded Marquise Daniels to Sacramento for a second-round pick. They traded Semi Erden and Luke Herangode to Cleveland for a second-round pick. And they also traded Kendrick Perkins and Lil Nate Robinson to the Thunder for Jeff Green, Nenad Krstić, and some picks, which I think became Fab Melo and Lucas Nogueira. Is that how you say his name? I haven't.
Nogueira.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that guy in a while. I'll take the lead on this. That was so heartbreaking. Oh, my goodness. Remember, I believe that's the season that the Celtics were the stars of ESPN's The Association.
Yep.
And so they had it on camera, Perk and Rondo, two very, very good friends. emotionally processing this trade. I understand why the trade was made. And also, I'm so shocked that Jeff Green is still like a productive member of the NBA community. But man, that was as a fan and as someone who, you know, had eyes for a trip to the finals, that was disappointing. And taking away Rondo's best friend, that really hurt. So Danny Ainge, please don't trade Javante Green.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I remember where I was with that one too. I was in high school. And, you know, it was interesting because if you watch the Celtics that year, you could tell that Perk was really not the same guy. He was lugging up the court. His rebounding and scoring had both fallen off a cliff. He was super inefficient, and the kind of stalwart defensive presence that helped the Celtics win the title in 2008 really wasn't there anymore. So I kind of figured that Perkins was a trade candidate at that time. But I was still quite sad to see him go. And I just didn't know enough about Jeff Green to really be enthused. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can argue about that trade, but Jeff Green was fine, I think. Yeah. But I was definitely bummed out about that one.
Yeah, it was the right trade, but it still sucked to have happen. It was really the first time it sunk in that the 2008 title core was ending,
say the least. So just quickly, it's a little too far in the past. We don't need to dwell on it, but back in 2010, Celtics landed Marcus Landry and Lil Nate Robinson for J.R. Giddens, Eddie House, and Henry Walker. How's that for a blast from the past? And then really, you have to go back to 2005 for another consequential Celtics trade deadline trade, where the Celtics landed Antoine Walker for Tom Gugliotta, Gary Payton, and Michael Stewart, which, man, 2005 is a crazy time. And I think the year before, and I didn't know this, that trade that saw Rasheed Wallace go to the Hawks for 48 hours, the Celtics were a facilitator on that, and I don't think I knew that. So shout out to Tom Gugliotta. I haven't shouted him out in a while. So, gentlemen, with that history lesson in the books, how are we feeling about the upcoming trade deadline?
Danny, this is a message to Danny Ainge specifically. I know that you have had your eye on Aaron Gordon for a couple of years now. Aaron Gordon's a fine player. Perfectly nice. Would be happy to have him on the team. If they ask for Marcus, hang up the phone. If you don't hang up the phone, and Marcus Smart is not a Celtic by the end of next week, I will be having words with you. Rest assured.
Dr. Quinn, you gonna follow that up?
I don't know what to say after that. I'm trying to steel myself for a variety. It just seems like this could go any which way at this point. It seems like something could swoop in out of left field entirely and just land on us. And we're all just like, well, how did that happen? But realistically, I'm mostly trying to steel myself for having pretty much the same team with maybe Wayne Ellington, just with everything else that we have to consider.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to say that I'm not as plugged in as other folks. And so I'm going to let smarter people than I tell me how to feel, which is exactly why we've decided to bring on Jared Weiss of The Athletic. All right. And now we're joined by former Celtics Wire editor and current Athletic NBA insider, Jared Weiss. He's instructed us to not ask him how he's doing and dive right into all things trade deadline. Jared, Jared's doing great for anyone who's truly curious. Jared, alongside Sam Amick and Shams Charani of The Athletic, have reported quite a bit this week, including that Aaron Gordon of the Orlando Magic has requested a trade, that things might be heating up in Atlanta, and that has evolved into conversations about the future of Marcus Smart in Boston. So, Jared, we're just going to run through some of the teams and names that have been kind of at the top of the NBA rumor mill and ask for your expertise and if you can divulge anything you've heard. So if that works with you, let's start in Atlanta. There's been a lot of buzz about the Hawks and the future of John Collins or Bogdan Bogdanovich. What have you heard and how has that been tied to Boston?
You know, what's funny is that report that we put out on Monday morning, I filed that at 1 a.m. or something like that. And then by the time I went to bed yesterday, it was already pretty outdated. And that's how these things always go, of course. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I was told yesterday was that it seems like the Celtics' focus has shifted more towards the Gordon deal and away from a Collins package. And when the funny thing was, you're trying to parse through the tea leaves of everything, was how could Marcus Smart be involved in a package for John Collins and Bogdan Bogdanović? But then now I'm hearing him coming up in the Aaron Gordon deal, and that's been pretty widely reported at this point. We're not the only ones reporting that. So it's like, I guess at this point, you just kind of come to accept that Marcus Smart could potentially be traded, which makes sense, because in this deal, we're talking about a good starter that's younger and fits a current, well, it fits a need right now, but I guess you're going to have new needs when you move on from Marcus Smart, and you're acquiring a really good in his prime, or I shouldn't say really good, but a good in his prime playmaker, playmaking wing that's like a versatile wing that can run pick and roll, can shoot the ball pretty well, that's being miscast in their current situation and will benefit greatly from being in a situation where they're basically the sixth man of the team. So it definitely makes a lot of sense. And it's, I mean, the big thing that I've come to realize over the last couple of years of Marcus Smart rumor mongering is that as much as the team values him, as amazing and unique as the things he does are, as high a designation as first team all defense and coming fourth in defensive player of the year rankings is, because of his offensive erraticism, which has definitely gotten better, it really caps his value. And it really seems like teams are just not willing to consider him as a fringe all-star quite in the way that people expect. But again, I mean, here's the thing. So if it was just Marcus Smart for these guys, then you would feel like that's fringe all-star value there, and that's fair. But then there's also two first-round picks involved in these frameworks that I've been hearing about. So that's when you're feeling like, okay, clearly Smart is being valued as like an average starter, when I think everyone that's been watching him up close for years feels like he's a very good starter and that he should be worth trading for a good, you know, a good potential but struggling starter in a guy like Aaron Gordon.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, how do you think trading multiple picks for this deal might impact, for example, getting off of Kemba's deal in the future or making a bigger deal later on down the road?
Significantly, because all they really have for a lot, you know, if they want to move off of Kemba Walker, then as of now, everything that I've been told from teams around the league, from people that are just like in the know, from other very well-qualified speculators, it's that Kemba Walker has negative trade asset value at this moment, which is like the least surprising thing ever, right? He's about to turn 31-year-old point guard who has been hurt and has not been playing well for a year now. And he already was a type of player who was, you know, there was a very high likelihood that his prime was going to end quicker and fall off harder than most players because of his size and his role. So teams are just really alarmed by him right now, and they just don't want to take the risk. And everyone knows the upside of Kemba Walker. I mean, Kemba Walker is an ideal player for a contending team most of the time as your third star, which is what the Celtics are trying to do. So, you know, Kemba has to be great. He has to be playing like he was playing before the knee arthritis set in February a year ago. If he does that over the course of the rest of the season, then he probably could recover some value, but not nearly as much value as you would expect for an all-star max player. So like basically he could go from like, you need to attach picks to be able to move him, to you just can move him without having to attach picks essentially. And so that, you know, that's where there becomes some flexibility. But basically, to answer your question, if that doesn't happen, which frankly, it's more likely it doesn't happen than likely it does happen. Then if the Celtics were to include two first round picks here, it would be basically mean that they're stuck with Kemba Walker if they want to try to make a big home run trade. But it really seems like if they're making this trade, there is no more big home run trade in the future.
Right. And one of the things we've talked about on this podcast is Marcus Smart, unfortunately, has one of those kind of mid-range contracts that's movable. If the payroll gets even more top heavy and there is a move to be made, we'll only hear his name moving forward. Jared, I do want to talk to you more about Aaron Gordon, but I suppose it's worth addressing that Jaylen Brown's name has even been floated in rumors. In a word, what do you think of the possibility of the Celtics trading Jaylen Brown?
Bullshit.
Cool. I love that word. Okay, let's move forward. So you reported about Aaron Gordon, who, correct me if I'm wrong, as late as February, had requested a trade from Orlando. What are you hearing about the state of the Aaron Gordon trade market, where Boston fits in on that, and anything else Magic related?
Yeah, and it's important to note with the trade request thing, this was not a situation that a lot of people miss in the context of the story, which was laid out right below that part of the story of the Magic were like, oh, we love Aaron Gordon. We're building our future around Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon comes in here and says, I'm a big star. Get me out of Orlando, the place where there are no stars or mythical creatures or anything, as we know about Orlando. That's not what happened. Orlando has been trading him for a year now, and he's been sitting around trying, you know, being professional about it, but quietly behind the scenes wanting to leave. And then it just got to the point where his representative went to their president of basketball operations and said, all right, you got to move us now, where we can't keep sitting here listening to trade rumors happening. Like, we want you to move us now, which is not like a trade demand. That's like, you've been shopping us and you keep balking on all these trades, including at draft night. They got to the finish line on the trade with Portland that ended up going for Robert Covington, to the point that Portland thought the deal was done. And then I was told that Jeff Weltman, the president of basketball operations, basically then just kind of ghosted Portland and then ended up backing out of the deal. But Portland thought the trade was done. The players on Portland thought the trade was done. Aaron Gordon, I think, thought he was going to be a Portland trailblazer, which would have been an ideal fit for him, obviously. And apparently Portland is still trying to go after him, but I think that because they already made the Covington trade, they just can't really compete with the other offers that are out there. So it sounds like they've fallen out of the race now. But so this was just, you know, Gordon just tired of them almost trading him over and over again. It's like, it's obvious the team is trying to move him. You know, we remember how it happened with Ray Allen in Boston, where Ray Allen got traded to the Grizzlies for OG Mayo. And then I think after the trade was agreed upon, for some reason, it fell apart from there. And so at that point, Ray was like, all right, well, you literally trade me and told me we've traded you and then canceled. So at this point, like, it makes sense for me to leave. And I think Aaron's kind of in that same situation. And it makes sense for him because he's wasting his career in Orlando. Orlando is a place that is relying on him to be its kind of primary offensive creator. And that is not what he's good at. And he knows that. He knows that he should be surrounded by players that can be the initiators and he can play off of them. And that plays to his strength significantly. So that's why that's why ever since the TPE came to be with Hayward, I mean, I had a lot of sources telling me, like, look for Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's wanting out. But I objectively felt that Aaron Gordon was the top target for them because you put him next to the Jays, especially if there's another point guard still like Kemba or Marcus or whatever, that is going to just allow him to do what he does best, and he's going to really thrive in that situation.
So along with Aaron Gordon's name, either tied to Boston or elsewhere, Evan Fournier has been independent of reporting that a Kemba Birch – Tristan Thompson, either addition or side trade, could be involved.
I would expect, you know, so Ken Birch wants out of Orlando, wants to go to Toronto, apparently.
He's from Canada, or he played school, or he's from Montreal, right?
I think so, yeah. So, although he would be playing for Tampa at this point, right? So
Montreal, that's the South.
The weird thing about it is because he's a free agent now. I mean, Toronto would have his bird rights, so I guess it would make it easier for him to re-sign, but he wouldn't get to go home at all at this point for the season. So he actually wouldn't even really move. He would just move like a couple, like, what, like 100 miles down the street, basically, to Tampa. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, they could do a deal where it's Birch, Fournier, and Aaron Gordon for Smart. I think Tristan Thompson, Semi Ojeleye, and probably one other player like Javonte Green or something like that. And they could make the money work that way and not touch the Hayward TPE, because I'm pretty sure Birch would go into the Enes Kanter TPE or something along those lines. But so they could do that, and the Celtics would prefer that because that way they could keep the TPE dry and then potentially make another crazy move or potentially find a deal where they could move Kemba Walker and bring a great player back in. So it is very possible that that's something that happens. And I would bet that that's probably what they're working on today as they get close to trying to complete this deal, if it really does happen. So that I think that's the ideal way to go. But the problem, though, is that maybe that's where the second draft pick comes into play in this situation, is that if you're going to get Orlando to take on Tristan Thompson, someone who they just don't really need, you know, for another year at nearly $10 million a year, then they're going to want more draft compensation on top of that. But it's important to note, just because the Celtics are sending multiple draft picks, presumably, doesn't mean that they're just sending unprotected first round picks. They could be sending picks with certain protections on them that turn them into second rounders eventually. So, you know, this could end up being that the Celtics don't actually surrender two first round picks at the end of the day.
So correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you're thinking either the Celtics and the Magic are going to go big or go home.
Not necessarily, because you could do a Smart for Gordon trade straight up and it's easy to pull off. I think it's just the Celtics feel that, Fournier also wants out of Orlando. A lot of people want out of Orlando, he'd like to get moved. It makes sense for them to move him if they can turn him into some sort of future draft capital. I had heard that there was a deal out there of like a second rounder and a moderate player, like a DeLon Wright or something like that, that was potentially out there for him, and that didn't happen. But so if they can get some modicum of long-term draft asset value out of a guy that's about to expire, who they don't even want on their team necessarily. Well, I mean, they would be fine with him, but like, they don't need him on their team and they're not going to resign him. Then that's a great move on their part. But just like for the Celtics, it's like, it has to be low asset value given up for him, because they're also unlikely to resign him.
Your colleague Joe Varden mentioned that the Celtics might be looking at some other big deals. Is that kind of a reference to the Collins thing, or is there something else maybe potentially brewing that we just don't know about?
Nothing that I know about besides Collins and Barnes. Those have been the three that I've been hearing about nonstop over the past few days. Really, the Barnes stuff has quieted down because there's been so much noise on Gordon. But I'm not sure. I mean, those are all pretty big trades. So I don't know of anything else that I can think of that would be bigger than that. I should say Norm Powell. I'm not sure how they would get involved with the Norm Powell deal. The difference is Norm Powell, I think, is a lot more re-signable than Evan Fournier. The problem is he's unrestricted. No, actually, he is restricted, isn't he?
He's got a player option for next year.
Oh, okay. Which he's not going to take. He's worth $20 million. Right. He's going to take that. What is $11 million or so on the PO? Yeah. So the problem is it's another guy. He's worth a lot because he's a really good player, but it's like there's so much risk of him losing. The Celtics are leaving. The Celtics in the past have always been not willing to include draft capital for guys that were rentals. They don't do rentals, and generally that's worked out fine for them, but obviously their franchise is in a much different situation than it has been in the past. The runway is, they're approaching the end of the runway here, and they have to take off.
Jared, it looks like we've spent time on this. We don't have to really get in the weeds, but there's some complications for bringing in a big contract vis-a-vis the Celtics tax bill. So bringing in a big name or a big contract is very exciting, and perhaps, to your point, helps this championship window reassert itself or take off anew. But it does ask ownership to perhaps foot a tax bill that is in the 20s of millions of dollars. What kind of appetite do you think ownership has for a hefty tax bill with this team largely residing with this core?
So I've always, you know, that's I think the biggest unknown around this team. Few people seem to claim that they know what the answer is. Maybe they do. I've been hinted that you shouldn't be certain that the Celtics are willing to take a deep dive into the tax. And so I think a deep dive means what Golden State is doing, for instance, where they signed Kelly Oubre for $15 million and also are paying like $60 million on top of that for luxury tax. Right. But they can do that because every Silicon Valley billionaire that walks into one of their like underground cavern booths or whatever pays like $50,000 a ticket. So it's like once the Chase Center reopens, it's gonna be like a cash printing machine, basically. The Celtics, I don't think they have that level of revenue. Not to mention, the Celtics owners don't even own the arena, so maybe their other business ventures are doing well, and their appetite is still as feverish as it was before. But I wouldn't be surprised if the pandemic has forced them to kind of be a little bit more austere in their planning. So I'm definitely certain that they would jump $10 to $15 million into the tax, which turns into probably like a $30 to $45 million bill on top of it. But I don't know if they would be, basically it's like, I don't know if they'd be willing to keep, have basically 4 to 5 max players on the roster, which they almost have done in the past, but haven't quite come, you know, haven't quite done in the past. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that when you do that, that's when you're paying a tax bill over $150 million usually.
Right. Well, Jared, we'll get you out of here on this. Preemptively, thank you for your time and a pretty busy week in the NBA, I'd say. Just your best guess on what the Celtics look like this time on Friday and what kind of the Eastern Conference looks like this time on Friday, because we know teams like the Sixers are sniffing around, say, Kyle Lowry. Or the Heat might make a splash. So if you were a betting man, and I truly don't know if you are, what do you think the state of the Celtics is post-deadline and the state of the East is post-deadline?
I'm not a betting man, but I'm going to put $1 on this. Cool. I think the big thing is that Kyle Lowry is going to Miami or Philadelphia. There's just no reason for it not to happen. It would just be silly if it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So that's happening. And I think the Celtics should hope he goes to Miami, because if Philadelphia gets him, I think Philadelphia wins the championship. So, but then Miami is going to be really freaking good as well. Although Miami has to give up a lot more, I think, than Philadelphia does to make the money work. So that'll be fascinating. But so I do think the Celtics are going to trade for one of these guys. I think the rotation will be noticeably different after the trade deadline between, I think, some of these vets getting cleared out so that some of these younger guys can play, and then them bringing in at least one, you know, core top seven rotation player in at the very least. I think that I would just be shocked if that didn't happen, because I think this team has enough potential to salvage that even if you don't trade the top core 4 or 5 guys, you still can improve this team enough that it can still be somewhat competitive without really screwing up your long-term plans or long-term cap flexibility. And then of course, like, Daniel Tice is expiring, so like they might want to make a move there now that Rob Williams is playing well. Although I think Tice is too important to this team that they would rather just try to move Thompson anyway. But so I think something like that is going to happen at the very least. And I would be really surprised if they don't make a move for one of Gordon, Collins, or Barnes. I would be very surprised if that didn't happen, because I just don't see the guy in this offseason that they get with the trade exception that is worth going for, because I don't see them trading Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal, which if they wanted to do that, I think that would probably get them Bradley Beal. I think that's the best offer in the NBA out there for Washington. But I don't think that improves the team. Like, Jaylen Brown is too good of a player. I don't think that improves the team enough that they would win. Because, like, look at Washington. Bradley Beal's playing at an MVP level. Russell Westbrook is playing at an MVP level almost, and they still can't really win. And the Celtics team isn't that much better than that Washington supporting cast.
I'd like to say they play better defense, but we know that that's probably not true.
Well, every entity that exists in the world plays better defense than Washington. But the Celtics are only slightly better, though.
Slightly better. We'll have to take it. Well, Jared, thanks so much for your time. We know this is a busy week. Jared is an insider for The Athletic. You can find him wherever you find NBA content, I'm sure. Jared, thanks for coming in.
Celtics wire forever, boys.
Celtics wire forever. All right. Thanks again for Jared Weiss coming in to talk to us. We're not sure how current that information will be. Things are going to move quick. So make sure you follow up with Jared over at The Athletic throughout this week. Make sure you follow up with Dr. Quinn over at Celtics Wire throughout this week. And make sure you follow up with Alex throughout this week for something very different. Alex?
Yeah. So as some of you might know, I'm in a band. I play music sometimes. And if you like the song that you heard at the beginning of this podcast when we transitioned in, I have good news for you. We've got a whole nother album worth of songs just like that one, except better, coming out in 3 days. Check out Divine Sweater. That's Divine Sweater. And Divine, the thing that comes from God, and Sweater, the thing that you put on when you're cold, on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp for releases and other good songs like that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So happy at Nowruz to those who celebrated. Happy Passover to folks who will celebrate. And to Celtics fans, buckle up. Catch you later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.